Now, let me ask you, what are you here for today? So, oh, we've been here before. You did this to us before, and all we do is just feel bad when you're done. You know? Why are you here? Just think about this a minute. Maybe I'll hit one of your buttons today. Maybe I've missed them in the past. I just got a few. Are you here because you're supposed to be here? Are you here for the fellowship? I mean, is it just the right thing to do, and so you're here? Are you here because you enjoy it? Are you here to support the church and the pastor? Are you here for your family? Are you here to please somebody else? You're afraid of what other people may think if you don't come? You know what all those things are? They basically come down to just duty. That's what they come down to. You come just because you enjoy it, then you're coming for the wrong motive anyway. That's a selfish motive. All the rest of those things have to do with what's right and what's wrong, you know. All of our righteousnesses are as filthy rags. There is none that doeth good. You think it's a good thing to come to church? Puts a different light on it, doesn't it? There is none that doeth good. If you think it's a good thing to come to church, you got twisted thinking. I mean, what you got to realize that what God says and what we think are two different things. What is it? Well, it's good. It's good for men to dwell together, you know. That's that one about that woman that flows down upon a beard, Aaron's beard and all that stuff. But anyway, when you get right down to it, what God says and what we understand from these scriptures all depends upon our approach to it. If it's about us, then when I say, is it a good thing to come to church and there's none that doeth good? You go, well, yeah, and then immediately you start justifying it. You do. Inside of your heart, immediately. You start to try to move around that thing and come out on the other side feeling just like you did when you went in. What about this? You want your affections for your Creator stirred? You want to renew a closer fellowship with Him? You want to appreciate Him more? You know what those are all based on? Those are based on your desires for Him. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy strength, and with all thy mind. Now, your soul loves God, believe me. When you start singing, then sings my soul, my Savior God to thee, and boy, if those tears start flowing out of your eyes and He just becomes bigger than everything else in your mind for that few minutes, believe me, that in your body. He didn't save your body. Your body got no use for Him. He hadn't done a thing for your body, so well, He's healed me a few times. You're a walking corpse. I reckon myself dead unto sin, but alive unto God. You know, we're crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. You know, in the life which I now live in the flesh, I live with the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave Himself for me. There's so much in this book that deals with us and our perspective toward God. It's amazing. And believe me when I tell you, a few years ago, I read every bit of this stuff, and I was looking at it from me. What should I get out of this? God, show me what you want me to see. Help me to understand. I don't know what that means. God, show me what that means. I want to know what that means. How come? I'm curious. Not curious about the right thing. You're curious to know more. That's what Eve was. She was curious to know more. What we're supposed to do is know Him better. That's where our desires should be, our affections should be. Set not your affections on things on this earth, but on things above, right? Where is He? He's seated together up there. We're seated together with Him in heavenly places. He's going to return again. I mean, that's where your affections should be. And when you start setting your affections on your treasures, He is the pearl of great price. He is the treasure. If you think you're going up there to get a crown and golden streets you're going to walk on in this big mansion, you got twisted thinking. You're looking at it from, what do I get out of it? Just a cabin in the corner of glory land. You stop and think about how many songs in this book are written like that. Anyway, well, let's move along. What are we here for? We're supposed to draw our attention to Him, off of ourselves, off this world, off of the problems, off of the physical problems, the mental problems, our family problems, you know, and all the rest of the crazy stuff. How do you do it? You do it by focusing on Him and His mighty works. One generation shall pray thy works to the next. You know, that's the way it's supposed to be. Anyway, we're talking about the living water. We're actually back in the sixth age of the earth, the millennial age. That's the time when Jesus Christ comes and rules and reigns with a rod of iron. It's the end of the tribulation. It's after the battle of Armageddon, and He sets up His kingdom down here. And it says His reign shall be glorious. I don't know if you've ever been around anything that's glorious, but when you get around His reign, it'll be glorious. You're not going to have to worry about near the stuff you do now. Of course, by then, you're going to have a supernatural body. You're going to rule and reign with Him, you know, and all that stuff's going to be fantastic. You're going to be able to see Him face to face and talk to Him, and you're going to tell Him thanks. You're going to be just like that little girl I've talked about so many times washing the dishes. I get to do this for the one that made me, boy. Isn't that kind of hard for you? Are you kidding? Just open the door and let me go, Lord. How come? You pay Him back, can you? Do you care about Him enough to try? Guys say, we don't work to get saved. We work because we are saved. Wrong reason. You ought to be working because you appreciate Him. One day you're going to meet Him, and when you do, you'll be thinking, boy, I have wasted my life on unimportant junk. That's what you're going to think. And you had the chance, and you blew it. Anyway, Zechariah 14:8, it says, and it shall be in that day that living water shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the former sea, half of them toward the hinder sea, and summer and winter shall it be. Now look over here at Ezekiel 47:1-7. Ezekiel 47:1-7. So what's in Ezekiel? All kinds of crazy stuff. You get over there and start reading that thing from the beginning on down through, you think this guy was some kind of a UFO nut and a freak of nature and lost his mind. You'd think the same thing about John over in Revelation. I mean, what are these scorpions that come out of the deeps with faces like lion and hair like women and stings in their tails like scorpions and hooves of horses? I mean, what are you talking about there? And those things torment men individually. I mean, you stop thinking about that World War II. Here's these bombers flying around with guns in the front, guns in the back. Well, there they are. They're flying out of the... That ain't nothing like this. This is something else entirely. Anyway, up the top of my page right there, it says, the vision of the holy waters. You wonder where Catholics get that holy water from? They get it because it's an imitation living water. You know where they get that water? They get it out of the faucet. They get that water out of the faucet, same way they get that blood of Christ out of a wine bottle. Same way they buy those wafers down at the Christian bookstore. So what's that got to do with anything? Then by prayer, we turn them into something that they're not. Man, if you believe that, you are gullible. Just because somebody says it happens don't mean it happens. What are they trying to do? They're trying to get next to Jesus Christ. They're trying to get next to this quote-unquote holy water, this living water, and there's something very special about that living water. We've been on it for a few weeks now, so I've been taken up with all this other stuff that he made. Anyway, moving along. Ezekiel 47:1-7. Watch this stuff. Afterward, he brought me again into the door of the house, and behold, water issued out from under the threshold of the house, eastward from the front door of the house, stood toward the east, and waters came from under the right side of the house at the south side of the altar. You know where that stuff comes out of? It comes out of that throne room. He said it's coming one way and it's coming another way. That matches all kinds of stuff in this book. Anytime I ever heard this message preached, it was preached about, boy, you don't have to worry about it. When you get down in that water, God will take care of you. You don't have to worry about drowning and sinking. He's going to take care of you, man. You can't get over, but He'll get you over. That ain't bad water. That's some good water right there. Then brought me out of the way of the gate northward and led me out of the way without the utter gate by the way, and he looked eastward, and behold, there ran out waters on the right side. And when the man that had the line in his hand went forth eastward, he measured 1,000 cubits. He brought me through the waters. The waters were to the ankles. Again, he measured 1,000 and brought me through the waters, and the waters were to the knees. Again, he measured 1,000 and he brought me through the waters. The waters were to the loins. Afterward, he measured 1,000, and it was a river that I could not pass over, for the waters were risen, waters to swim in, a river that could not be passed over. Doesn't that make you think about going out there to Pensacola Beach, and you go out, and that water's kind of shallow, 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 shallow. Off she goes, man. Finally gets up over your head. Now we got to swim. You want to try to swim across the Gulf? That's a mess of water coming out from under those doors. You know that? That's not somebody turning on the faucet. That's some serious amount of water. And he said unto me, son of man, hast thou seen this? And he brought me and caused me to return to the brink of the river. Now when I had returned, behold, the bank of the river, there were many trees on the one side and on the other. You think that's bad water? That ain't bad water, man. That's some good stuff. Look at Revelation 22, 1 to 2. Revelation 22, 1 and 2. And he showed me a pure river of water of life. He showed me a pure river of water of life. What's special about that water? There's some life in that water. I'm not talking about filtered osmosis, et cetera, et cetera. I'm talking about something that contains life. And so you're saying that water can make you come alive? And he says, the words that I speak unto you, they are spirit, they are life. When he creates, he says, by the breath of his mouth. You don't think there's some power in that stuff? There's some power there. Anyway, he says, he showed me a pure river, water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the midst of the street of it, and on either side of the river, were there the trees of life, which bear 12 manner of fruits, and yielded her fruit every month, and the leaves of the trees were for the healings of the nations. So what's going on there? God's trying to tell you something about himself. This stuff isn't about something, oh, that's fascinating. Boy, that's going to be interesting. He's going to be the one that's interesting. And you're not going to look down at that water and, oh, man, wait till I show so-and-so this. Boy, they're going to really, oh, man, I'm going to, look at this. Look at how clear that water is. No, it ain't going to be like that. It's going to be the way it's supposed to be down here. You see that Gulf of Mexico? You get that aura down that beach. You ever seen that? Man, that's incredible to me. That aura, that just light bouncing off that sand and bouncing back up into the atmosphere. You got sunlight hitting the top of those molecules, and you got enough light intensity bouncing on the bottom of those molecules, and you're getting twice as much light right through that aura. That's where that's coming from. You go down there and you look out into that water, and that water is clear, and you got that white sand underneath it, and that water is such a beautiful color. And you look out across that thing, and you're supposed to say, man, God, you are incredible. You can make some stuff. You know that? He says, yeah, I know. I said it was very good. I'm glad you bothered to notice. You know what we do instead? We go out there and we look at it and I say, oh, ain't that pretty? It isn't supposed to be like that. It's supposed to be when you see that clear river and those trees, you go, man, God, you can make some really neat stuff. He said, you ain't seen nothing yet. What do you mean I ain't seen nothing yet? I have not seen, neither ear heard, neither hath it entered into the hearts of man what God prepared for them that serve him. Did I hear somebody say serve him? Work for him? No, love him. If you want to get in on this deal, you'll start trying to figure out how to love him more, and it isn't because you're working harder for him. That's a dead-end street, and you can't do enough. You know why? Because without me, you can do nothing. You can't take credit for anything you do. Nothing. He gets the credit, or there isn't any credit to be had. Well, let's move along here. Let's get back into what we've been talking about here for the next few minutes and try to cover some more of this ground. Zechariah 14:8. And it shall be in that day that the living waters shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the former sea and half of them toward the hinder sea, and summer and winter shall it be. Now, we've looked at this thing and looked at it and looked at it and looked at it and digging out little pieces that the Lord has kind of opened our understanding to about this business of the water. And there's a whole lot more going on about water than the baptistry up here that you fill with a city water system that's polluted and get baptized in it. I ran to an 80-year-old guy the other day and talked to him for a little while over there at that trailer park. He come in, was selling fruit for his church. And I said, you Seventh-day Adventist? Oh, no. I'm Church of God, you know. I said, oh, okay, well, I just thought maybe you're Seventh-day Adventist. You know, they're really heavy into this eating good, you know, and eating the right things and meeting on Saturday. They all about their works. Anyway, we got talking. He talked right. He had kind of a good spirit about him, you know. But it just was something that wasn't just quite right. I mean, you think it's God's plan for you to go out and sell fruit for your church? God says, let every man give. How? As he purposeth in his heart. If you have to buy Christmas presents for somebody and you don't want to buy them, you get no joy out of it. If you feel like you have to put something in this offering plate, you're not going to get any joy out of it. And until you start to realize who God is and have a desire not to give because it needs to be done, but to put something back in there to just say, God, I really do love you. And if that doesn't warm your heart to put something in that offering plate because of who he is and what he's done for you, if that doesn't warm you up, you're probably better off just to keep it in your pocket. You say, well, what about everybody else that it benefits? Well, you're right back onto that stuff, and now you're doing it out of duty. Now you think you're doing something good, don't you? Does he need your money? No, he doesn't. Why does he do that? God loveth the cheerful giver. He wants you to purpose in your heart what you're doing, why you're doing it. He didn't want to make you feel like you're under this load, and if you don't give, I'm going to get you. God's got enough money to do everything he needs to do. And to think that he's got it, but it's still in your pocket, that's foolish thinking. That's foolish thinking. What can you give to God that you haven't received from him? I mean, he makes that real clear in the scriptures. Don't worry too much about that. But anyway, getting back into this thing about this water, God's showing us a little bit more about. Now, God controls things with water. You say, what kind of stuff does he control with water? All kinds of stuff. Look at Zechariah right here in 14:16-19. It says, it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which come against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King and the Lord of hosts, and to keep the feast of the tabernacle. And it shall be, whoso will not go up of all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain. You know what it'd take for God to destroy America or any other country? Just turn the water off. If he starts turning that water off, you got real problems. And it isn't going to be washing your car. It's going to be pure survival pretty soon. It says, and if the family of Egypt shall not go up and come not, that have no rain, there shall be a plague. Now, that's that really bad plague where the eyes consume wind or sockets and the rest of that stuff. But you see what he's using right there? They don't get any rain. He starts out punishing them. Isn't that interesting how many other things are connected to the rain? Too much rain, not enough rain? There's a lot more to this water business than any of us would give credit to. There's no question about it. But that's clear on out into the sixth age of the earth. He's doing that when he rules and reigns with a rod of iron. So he says, okay, here's your warning. You don't get over here. Here's your warning. No rain. Okay, you don't like that? Okay, well, you're really not going to like what's next. You'd think those guys would get the message, wouldn't you? Pharaoh didn't get the message. They've hardened their hearts against God, that they receive not the truth, nor the life that he bringeth, you know, those kind of things. Some hard people out there. When you start seeing God doing mass destruction, a bunch of that stuff's water. What? The world being overflowed with water perished. And then you got Genesis flood, you know, from 6 to 10. Then he puts that bow in the clouds. So now he says, well, I'm not going to flood the earth again like that. So what's he do? He just stops the rain. He goes to the other extreme. You know what happens in the tribulation? Those guys have power to stop the rain, that it rain not. Boy, that's some tough stuff, you know? Anyway, now God gives life with water, but it's very different water. It's not the kind of water we're talking about here. There's a big difference in water. Back there in the past, he gave life because Jesus was the living water. Remember at the well? Oh, back there in the past also, you remember the angel troubled the water? And they're healed. Later on, the water coming out of there heals the nations. He brings in this fountain of living water. What's that type of that stuff in the future? That wasn't just some freak accident. The Lord doesn't do anything by accident. Anyway, today you got the present living water. What is that? Well, it's the Holy Spirit. Out of our bowels to go fountains of living water. What is that? The Spirit. And it's life. Those words that they speak unto you, their spirit and their life. You don't need a Bible to lead somebody to the Lord. All you got to do is repeat the words that God says with the right spirit, and the Spirit applies those things and brings that conviction of sin, righteousness, and judgment to come to the lost. He brings comfort to those that are suffering and afflicted, and he brings light to those that desire more about God. He does it all. You get right down to it. Can a pen take credit for writing a letter? Do you realize that there's somebody else using the pen? And it was the ink that wrote the letter anyway. It wasn't the pen. It was something else entirely. What was it? It was what was inside the pen coming out. The other thing was nothing more than just a vehicle, just a tool. Anyway, moving along here. In the future, you got living water, and he gives life through that stuff. Look over in Ezekiel 47. There's some neat stuff over in Ezekiel here. I think Ezekiel was one of the most fascinating guys in the whole book. Ezekiel 47, 8, and then the first part of 9. And he said unto me, these waters issue out toward the east country and go down into the desert and go into the sea, which being brought forth unto the sea, the waters shall be healed. Healed of what? You remember that star falling to earth called wormwood? And of the third of the sea dies and all. Man, that stuff gets polluted out there through that tribulation. There's some bad stuff happening during that period of time, and it doesn't just happen to people. It happens to the entire earth, and it happens to the waters. And so he has to do something to regenerate those waters, and the waters get healed. And it shall come to pass that everything that liveth, which moveth, whithersoever the river shall come, shall live. Now stay with me here. This gets pretty interesting. Those are life-giving waters in abundance. But there's more to that. Bible says over in Matthew, and it says over in Mark, it says, follow me and I'll make you to be fishers of men. There must be good and bad water. You say, what, do you think so? Absolutely. Is there not a good influence here? And is there not a bad influence? And we're kind of caught in the middle. Isn't that what's going on? Well, there's good waters and there are bad waters. So what kind of bad waters? Why do you think those Christians run around with that crazy looking little fish on there? You think that's an accident too? No, it's all hooked back into what God tells us. Now, do we understand it completely? No, I don't understand it. But what's going on is if you stay in that bad water, you're going to die. If I'm born once, I'm going to die twice. If I'm born twice, I'm going to die once. But it also talks about some other really interesting things. Say, like what? You realize that it says, and the sea gave up the dead which were in it, totally different. How come the sea? It says that death and hell gave up the dead which were in them. Well, couldn't you cover everything with death? Well, if you couldn't get it all with death, couldn't you with hell? What about that crazy sea? You think, well, that must be someplace else entirely. Well, maybe so. It might be one of those places for the angels, you know, they're kept reserved. But maybe not. You say, why is that? Well, it's like that bad water. There's something else going on there. Remember, he says, I'll make you fishers of men. What if you don't get out of that bad water? Where are you going to end up? You may end up in the sea. I say, you really think that? Look, all I know is what I read. I don't have any more light on it than you do. But at the same time, I know there's something here about God, and I know he's trying to say something to us that will demonstrate a little bit more of what he's doing and why he's doing it. Anyway, get over into Luke 5:1-8. Luke 5:1-8, real quick. This thing's talking about what's going to happen here as far as the Lord showing up and talking to Peter. And it says, it came to pass that the people pressed upon him to hear the word of God, and he stood by the lake Gennesaret, and he saw two ships standing by the lake, but the fishers were gone out of them and were washing their nets. And he entered into one of the ships, which was Simon's, and he prayed unto him that he would thrust out a little from the land, and he sat down and taught the people out of the ship. Now when he had left speaking, he said unto Simon, launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a draught. And Simon answering said unto him, Master, we have toiled all night and have taken nothing. Nevertheless, at thy word, I will let down the net. And when they had this done, they enclosed a great multitude of fishes and their net brake. And they beckoned unto their partners, which were in the other ships, that they should come and help them. And they came and filled both the ships so that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell down at Jesus' knees saying, depart from me, for I'm a sinful man, O Lord. Now, I've told you before about that prayer meeting I had with the Lord, and the thing that shut that thing off was when my attention got back on myself, and I saw myself as how sinful I was in the presence of a holy God. That's a big mistake. Why? Because your attention's back on you. Big mistake. And where do you think all them fish came from? You realize who was in that boat? Who? Jesus Christ. The living water was in that boat. You think those fish responded to that? You think they knew what was in that boat? Listen, he says, and if I be lifted up, will draw all men unto me. Where do you think them fish came from? I think, honestly, they were drawn to him. He wasn't out there before, and so there wasn't any fish around. He shows up, he gets up in that boat, and them fish go, "Oh, man, I'd like to get some of that." Now, you guys think I'm probably nuts, and I got to stop here, but boy, before we're through, you're going to get the message. This thing is so connected to those crazy fish and this crazy little old thing that happens with Peter. It's not just one little old thing that happens where the Lord says, "Oh, Peter, you want to see how this goes? Okay, well, I'll impress you with this miracle of the fish." There's much more going on here. We'll get into that next week. Let's close in prayer.